From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Wow, what a week. Can you believe here we are less than two weeks away from the big day. This hour, we're going to go find out what's happening on the left. Talk to Howard Gutman, the ambassador and former U.S. ambassador to Belgium 2008 to 2013, managing director of the Gutman Group, which is a diversified global consulting firm, big-time Democrat, and I want to get a perspective on how everything's viewed right now. I am pretty sure, after doing an event with Howard, where he stands vehemently anti-Trump, but can be an analyst, which I think is important. It doesn't matter who you vote for. Can you be an analyst and look at something objectively? Best example is sports. Oh, I might be a Yankee fan, but if you hire me to cover the game, I'm going to tell you what's happening in the game and preview it. You will never know who I'm rooting for. Big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We'll see what the Russians and the North Koreans decide to do here. As I said earlier, if these North Korean soldiers decide to join the fight against Ukraine, they will become legitimate military targets.
Oh, really? So if the North Korean soldiers go to a war, they can be targeted? Don't shoot the North Koreans? Did anyone think the Ukrainians weren't going to shoot the North Koreans? The bigger question is, why are they there? And what are we going to do about it? Is this a sudden world war? Because now South Korea is saying, I'm thinking I'm going to give Ukraine some weapons. After getting praise from Russia for staying out of it, now they're not. They might even send troops. Ladies and gentlemen, is anyone watching the store?
Number two.
I speak with not only sincerity, but with a real firsthand account of watching him do this work. I have no reluctance in saying that. No, of course I don't.
Really? Someone's not telling the truth. More questions about how bad Joe Biden's mental health is and the cover up the VP was a part of. Bob Woodward, of all people, chronicles more alarming behaviors behind the scenes and his failings that shows America is still in bad hands or no hands.
Number one.
It is clear from John Kelly's words that Donald Trump is someone who, I quote, certainly falls into the general definition of fascist. Donald Trump is increasingly unhinged and unstable.
That is the Kamala Harris. Desperate for a message, she got one. Trump is bad. 2024. Harris pounces on John Kelly's accusations from Trump and his love for dictators, fascists, and Hitler, then goes and Hitler and meanders through a friendly CNN town hall as former President Trump picks up the momentum. And that's where we'll begin. First off, so just so you know, John Kelly yesterday told The Atlantic, or it was published yesterday, and you heard the audio. We got some of it. And just says Donald Trump at times says he praised Hitler, said he did some good things, and said that at least the German generals listened and had ordered. And as I told you at the time, what he's referring to the fact is, and now we know for sure, is that both General Mattis and General Kelly thought the president should not be president, didn't like a lot of things he wanted to do, and thought it was their job to make sure it wasn't done. And if you want to know the frustrations that he felt, not only with the investigation on his first 2 years that didn't belong, the Russia investigation, the Mueller report, everything that happened after, this was going on behind the scenes. And he doesn't talk about his staff. He talked about his generals. Why? Because General Mattis and General Kelly, not Chief of Staff and Secretary of Defense, even though they were Chief of Staff and Secretary of Defense, he always called them my generals. That's what they equated to. Pretend as if you've never met Trump, and you pretend as if John Kelly hasn't indicated he felt this way before. Although we do have reports in 2018, we show text messages and tweets showing how much he respected Trump. What are we supposed to believe? Bottom line is, you have Kamala Harris with something to go on because she has no issues, no charisma, no handle on policy, no mission to get things done. We still have no idea what type of White House she'll run, like the left winger that ran in 2019, the invisible vice president, or more of Biden. So let's talk about what Kamala Harris said. Opportunity awaits. What could she actually say about Donald Trump? Not town hall related. Here's Kamala Harris. And she walked out of her residence and made a statement about Donald Trump. And here She is 12.
Do you believe that transgender Americans should have access to gender-affirming care in this country?
I believe we should follow the law. I mean, I think you're probably pointing to the fact that Donald Trump's campaign has spent tens of millions of dollars.
They're trying to define you on this.
Yes.
I'm asking you to define yourself, though. Just broadly speaking, what is your value? Do you believe they should have that access?
I believe that people, as the law states, even on this issue about federal law, that is a decision that doctors will make in terms of what is medically necessary. I'm not going to put myself in the position of a doctor.
Okay. How ridiculous was that answer? I'm not going to put in the place of a doctor. Transgender rights is not doctor related. It's the principal in school not telling the parents. It is a prisoner deciding that they want to flip prisons. That's not a doctor. That's a decision. And she used to be all for it, and now she's afraid to say it. So she has, I'm going to give you more examples, just flailing on all issues in front with friendly audiences with just crisp, clear, easy questions. The problem is her answers aren't good because what she believes is not popular. So she holds back and answers in a neutral way, which in an hour plus town hall is a disaster. But earlier, this was her element, attacking Trump. Case in point, cut 29.
It is deeply troubling and incredibly dangerous that Donald Trump would invoke Adolf Hitler, the man who is responsible for the deaths of 6 million Jews and hundreds of thousands of Americans.
So she gets out there in a stark speech in the vice presidential residence and makes that speech. I'm not too sure politically you should be doing that. Do you think in an Oval Office address you should be attacking your political opponent with trying for re-election? I'm pretty sure you shouldn't be doing that, but no one's going to say anything when they talk about the Hatch Act or things of that nature. If you are working in government or using government facilities or in front of government, the presidential seal, let's say at the White House, you usually don't talk about your political opponent in a political way, only if it becomes newsworthy. This is something that Kelly's talking about in Atlantic Magazine that took place 4 years ago, where according to the former president, never took place at all. So she came out ripping on that. And that's why she's going to give her closing arguments at the Ellipse. Why the Ellipse? Because that's where Donald Trump gave his speech on January 6th. And after seeing her consistently since July, when she got the nomination because Joe Biden got stabbed in the back by all his friends and maybe her. This big story hasn't been written yet. That's why she's going to just bring up January 6th, unhinged, too old, whatever. Not, this is what I want to do. I want to turn the page, even though I'm in the same book. It's crazy what they're asking people to do, which is why, in a very close race, in most polls, Donald Trump is on top. If you want to know how inadequate that town hall was last night, I mean, I couldn't even read the sound bites. I was getting bored reading them and angry reading them because she never gets to the point. Kamala Harris, when asked about Joe Biden, how are you like or don't like Joe Biden? She says why she didn't do what she did, was promising to do during her time as vice president, all these things. She said, because I was vice president with Joe Biden. Reveals her main weakness as a politician is she works too hard. Please. Refuses to name her one major policy, goal, or accomplishment. Dodges questions on whether Trump or Biden are responsible for high grocery prices. When asked, who is a better friend to Israel, you or Donald Trump? Ladies and gentlemen, that's the easiest question, period. If you asked Trump that question, what do you think he'd say? If you asked Trump the question about who's responsible for high grocery prices, what do you think he'd say? You got an answer. She gives no answers. To the point where when they did a panel after her town hall and listened to David Axelrod, describe what he heard, cut six.
I think it was a mixed night, okay? I think she was very strong coming out of the gate, and she obviously came with a purpose. She was very strong on, as she has been, on abortion rights because she feels passionately about it. She could be clinical on some of these economic issues. She was great on the long-term care for the elderly to help people in the sandwich.
The anecdote about helping her mother put on her sweater and her.
But the things that would concern me, and then I she did one thing at the end that I thought was really important. The things that would concern me is when she doesn't want to answer a question, her habit is to kind of go to word salad city. And she did that on a couple of answers. One was on Israel. Anderson asked a direct question, would you be stronger on Israel than Trump? And there was a 7-minute answer, but none of it related to the question he was asking.
So look, if David Axelrod can't stomach it, and he's best friends with David Plouffe, who's working in communications with Harris, who knows, he might be directly trying to help her, and he's still expressing his frustration 12 days from an election. This is a train wreck. I'm not saying that she's going to lose or win, but she is a train wreck. Governor Jeff Landry is next, the 57th governor of Louisiana. What he's going to talk about that he's dealing with is stunning, but it relates to legal immigration. And Ambassador Howard Gutman gives an idea of what they're saying and feeling on the left. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Let's just fix it. Why is there any ideological perspective on it? Let's just fix the problem.
To fix the problem, you're doing this compromise bill. It does call for $650 million that was earmarked under Trump to actually still go to build the wall.
I am not afraid of good ideas where they occur.
You know, so you don't think it's stupid anymore?
I think what he did and how he did it did not make much sense because he actually didn't do much of anything. I just talked about that wall, right? We just talked about it. He didn't actually do much of anything.
But you do want to build some wall.
I want to strengthen our border.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. And that was, as you know, Kamala Harris last night at the town hall, not admitting that the wall works, not admitting that she once called it a medieval vanity project, but yet refuses to answer the question, are you going to build the rest of the wall, the $650 million worth of wall, many of which we paid for already? Governor Jeff Landry joins us now. Governor, you have another challenge from illegal immigration. What has just been dropped in your lap thanks to the unvetting of people coming across the border from China?
Yes. Absolutely. I missed a little bit, Brian. I think we had a little technical glitch here. But look, as the Attorney General, I consistently warned that allowing people into this country unchecked with just an open border creates a tremendous amount of problems. You know, we've seen the drugs, we've seen the human trafficking, we've seen the criminal activity, and then we've started to see an uptick in infectious diseases that this country had really eradicated for a long time. I mean, you've seen headlines where we've got more cases of polio, measles, mumps, and now we've got a Chinese national that left China and ended up in the United States illegal, so with an illegal border crossing.
And in Louisiana. Arrested
by ICE in California, transported to Louisiana with a very rare form of drug-resistant tuberculosis that's only found in China and other countries. Like, so we are bringing dangers into this country because of the border policies that the Democrats and Kamala Harris have put in place.
What about all these sanctuary cities where they don't even cooperate with ICE? So when you have criminals in the area, they can't even go up to ICE and say, hey, what do you got on them? ICE can't go up to local police and say, I got a lot on them. Turn them over to me. They just don't cooperate. Do you have that in any city in Louisiana, Governor?
No. We have, when as Attorney General, we led an effort to basically abolish the sanctuary cities that we had. We only had a couple here in Louisiana. And as far as I know, we pretty much eradicated that policy here in this state. I mean, we're not going to tolerate it. I can tell you this. There was one in New Orleans. I don't know what New Orleans PD does, but the state police are now in the city of New Orleans assisting the New Orleans Police Department. And we're under no consent decree. We're under no orders. We can ask anyone whatever we want to ask them.
Well, oh, that's good. So when how will immigration face you guys? Do you have the gang issue?
We've had a small uptick in the gang activity, especially around the Jefferson Parish area, which is the parish or county that's right next to Orleans Parish. But nothing like we've seen in some of the other parts of the country. But it certainly has caused havoc on our criminal justice system. It's created problems. The illegal immigration crisis has basically put pressure on the state treasury, either through education or the criminal justice system or our social programs as well. But again, Brian, let's not lose sight. The fact of the matter is Americans wake up every morning and have for decades now, recognizing that our healthcare system in this country has been pretty robust. We've been able to eradicate some of the most deadliest diseases out there, okay, that you find in other countries, but you did not find in the United States. And today, all of the work that all of the healthcare providers and doctors and nurses and researchers and pharmaceuticals have done in order to help us stay safe and healthier is being undone by an open border.
So let's talk about something else. You know, President Trump's been in a bit of a role. There's a little bit of panic on the left. I think it's beyond opinion. I think it's a fact. But now you have General Kelly, his former chief of staff, attacking Trump by what he's saying, his admiration for Hitler and dictators. Cut 29.
Certainly, the former president is in the far right area. He's certainly an authoritarian. Admires people who are dictators. He has said that. So he certainly falls into the general definition of fascist, for sure.
If he was left to his own devices, would he be a dictator if he didn't have people around him?
Oh, I think he'd love to be.
So your thoughts about this timing, and is that the Trump you know? Do you look at him as a fascist?
Absolutely. I mean, let me tell you something. If there's any form of dictatorship in this country, it normally is in the Department of Defense. I would say General Kelly, as a general, would probably be more likely to be a dictator than the President of the United States. I mean, Donald Trump has said repeatedly, we want to give states more power. That's not something that dictators do. You don't give power away if you want. You consolidate power. He's saying we want to decentralize the federal government. That's not something you do if you want to consolidate power. I mean, General Kelly may have a bad rash in his backside over this, but that's his own problem. I mean, look, right now, I would tell you that there are a bunch of people out there that are just they're just backhurt over this. They're wrong. The country has never been more divided before. And it's like, and if there's any fascist form of or any party that supports a fascist form of government, I mean, there's no one. Exhibit A is the Democrat Party.
Well,
right?
It's
think about it. They're the ones that told Facebook and Twitter and all the others what we could or couldn't say on the internet. That's a fascist form.
Yeah.
That's things that the Democrats have done.
Gotcha. Governor Landry, unique challenges to a broken border. He's just expressing it. It's everybody's problem. It's a 50-state problem now. Ambassador Howard Gutman next on the left. What are they thinking? What about the stretch one? What's their closing argument? I know where it'll be. Would you be in it?
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I think that the word salad stuff gets on my nerves. I think that some of the evasions are not necessary. But when she's talking about trying to get you a house, I believe her. When she's talking, like, I'm trying to get you to help for your mama,
yes,
who's sick, I believe her.
Yeah.
When she's talking about, I'm going to do what I can to bring prices down, I may not agree with those tools, but I believe she's going to try to apply them. And so I believe that this is somebody who actually cares about people. And I think that she passed that test tonight. So on how she did it and some of that stuff got on my nerves. But I believe that she is going to try to get people.
Well, it was a town hall that was almost impossible to watch. And Anderson Cooper did a great job just asking basic questions. And what Van Jones and David Axelrod said is, well, she came off nice, but you can't say you learned a thing. Maybe Howard Gutman feels different. He's a Democrat, former United States Ambassador to Belgium, managing director of the Gutman Group, which is a diversified global consulting investment and transactional practice. Howard, great to hear from you. It was great doing politics and pints with you in Richmond. First off, give you a background. When did you start becoming a Democrat? Day one?
I was born a Democrat in Whitestone, Queens, the son of an illegal alien who spent 27 months in the woods of Poland during the Holocaust. And then we had quotas for people from Poland after the war. So he got a phony passport from Danzig, which was Gdansk, Poland, a free state, and came to America without a penny, not speaking the language. And then Eisenhower pardoned all the people who came in that way. And there I was on the road to the American dream.
And now you've worked for different campaigns, correct?
Well, I've done a lot more than that. I ended up going to Columbia University and Harvard Law School and was a United States Supreme Court clerk for two Republican justices, O'Connor and Stewart, and a special assistant to the director of the FBI, a Republican, which was William Webster in the Meese administration. I was a special assistant for counterintelligence and counterterrorism. Then I was a 27-year leading Washington lawyer, and then a U.S. ambassador under Barack Obama, the U.S. ambassador to Belgium, representing America, but picked by Barack Obama, and have throughout had a long association with Fox, starting back with Bill Shine when I used to go on O'Reilly and the rest and try to defend the truth.
The truth as you see it, and always did a good job in an affable way. What did you think? Were you able to watch that town hall last night?
Well, there's two ways to ask, were you able? Did I get to the TV in time, and was I able to get through it? Both were yes, and I'd give her about a C. So remember, I don't view myself as Democrat talking points to Republican. My show on the radio is called As I See It. So it was worthwhile for her to go on to do the John Kelly stuff, to do the sort of at least take a look at me. But she had a much better opportunity. She was up there with bases loaded, two out in the ninth. That wasn't quite a strikeout, but it was more like a slow roller to second. I think she was nervous. I think she could have answered questions like, your greatest weakness. On the other hand, if you ever asked Donald Trump, tell us your biggest fault, it would be, I didn't cheat more in my taxes or, molest more women. He wouldn't have answered that question any better. But she clearly missed an opportunity.
No, I'll tell you exactly how. I can tell you exactly how he would have answered. He said, I made mistakes hiring people in the beginning. I didn't know anybody, because he's been asked it multiple times. She should have had an answer. Here's what Vice President Harris said on the thing that matters fundamentally most, you could argue, on grocery prices. Cut five.
Grocery prices have gone up quite a bit in the last 4 years. Yeah. And some people blame former President Trump. Some people blame President Biden. Who would you say is correct? And what would you do to bring prices down for Americans?
Thank you, Eric. And you're absolutely right. You know it. I know it. I think most Americans know it. Price of groceries is still too high. And we need to address it in a number of ways. One of my aspects of doing what we need to do to bring down the cost of living for working people and the middle class in America is to address the issue of grocery prices. Part of my background and how I come to it is probably a new approach grounded in a lot of my experiences as a former attorney general, where I took on price gouging. And part of my plan is to create a new approach that is the first time that we will have a national ban on price gouging.
Oh, Howard, you got to be kidding. You talk to grocery store owners, you talk to them. John Cassavetes, who runs WABC, he has grocery stores. The margins are too small to begin with. Now, that might be something you might bring up, but is that the way to get prices down? How would you have answered that?
Brian, I would be probably the only honest politician. I would say, look, coming out of COVID, we gave away endless money because we thought society would crater. So now we have very low unemployment. We can't even get people to work at Subways or McDonald's at $15 an hour. The economy's roaring. And when the economy roars, grocery prices will be high. It's not Donald Trump's fault. It's not Joe Biden's fault. It's not something that a single president does. But the question is, Americans are suffering for it. They can do better. How do we bring it down? Mm-hmm. And what we bring down is the market forces that work over time. The market forces that work over time, the Fed just finally you know, finally cut the interest rate, and things will slow down. You know, so, but nobody, look, it's, we're a week and a half from an election. You're not going to find an honest politician out there. You're going to find Brian Kilmeade, who's by far the most articulate Trump spokesman. If he doesn't make you press secretary, he's crazy. And you're going to find Howard Gutman, who's the last Democrat to tell the truth.
Couple of things. I know you're trying to compliment me, but if you even talk to the Trump people, the problem they have is that I'm all in Ukraine and he is not. I am. I'm for no limitations in that war. He's for getting both sides together. I'm for putting them in NATO. Donald Trump is definitely not. I'm for committing to defend Taiwan if invaded. Donald Trump is definitely not. And we still have conversations and I could still have people on. But I would say that I'm not pretending that I don't understand him. Like some people come out when he says things that are unorthodox. And they say, I can't believe he just said that. This is now since 2016, Howard. They're acting as if they just met Donald Trump.
So you're partly right on that. So, yes, look, I listened to Donald Trump back in the Howard Stern days, you know, 30 years ago, and used to say, I can't believe he said that. So there's always been that element. But in honesty, I do think he has become more daffy. And so when you get older, you could go the Joe Biden way. You get sort of less articulate and that sort of the dimension way. But we also all have our, you know, weird uncles in the attic who are just sort of daffy. They weren't daffy when they were 50 and even 60. By the time they're getting to be 80, they're daffy. I think Donald Trump, you can't believe he said it all his life, but now you can't believe it even more. And I think there is actually cognitive decline, but yet part of it is that's who he always was. So I think we're both right on that one.
Right. So right now you said last week on stage, even though you don't want to see it to happen, you think that Trump is more likely to win. Why?
A lot of it is just feel and intuition, but you can kind of feel it. So the question you have is if the polls all look tied, who's lying? Are there people out there who are really planning to vote for Kamala but just won't say it? Or are there people out there who are really planning to vote for Trump and just won't say it? And I might be a pessimist, but usually I have a pretty good feel for this. I knew when at the end Hillary was running into an unexpected loss, and I knew when Joe Biden wasn't. I just have the sense that the Democrats, in a funny sense, peaked too early, that the people are immune now to hearing any more about Donald Trump. The funny thing is, as I made these points about his competence decreasing, Jeff Katz, our mutual friend, said, no one cares anymore. And that's true. It doesn't matter what he did in January and it doesn't matter what he'll do if he loses this time. No one cares anymore. They're just sick of it. If they're Republicans, they're voting for Republican. And if they're Democrats, they might have a tough time voting for a black woman without saying it. Black men are not supporting her in the numbers that they should. White women aren't. So I just think you look at it, you're told they're all tied. She has to win Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and that district in Nebraska. And I think she's going to lose Pennsylvania. I think there are a lot of people in Pennsylvania, potentially Jewish vote, who are just won't go that way. So my sense is, unless something radically happens in the next week and a half,
right.
And by the way, in this world, you know, usually what happens in a week and a half, here we could have two new candidates by a week and a half, but unless something radically happens in a week and a half, I think he's going to win Pennsylvania, and that's going to be the difference.
So, Howard, that's a good, great analysis. I think you could be right, but a couple of things I think is going on that I think is good for the country. In 2020, if you were kind of hedging, you know, the Trump wouldn't have hedged, but people like, you know, don't be too tough on crime. You don't want to seem like you're racial intolerant. They talked about the border. Trump's tough on the border. We don't need that. You know, they were crossing with Biden Harris T-shirts, but it wasn't a real liability. It wasn't a liability to talk about. It was a liability if you're on the left to not talk about something that maybe not the new Green Deal, but about green energy, getting back in the Paris climate change. But now nobody brings up getting back in that because mainstream of America, Republican or Democrat, do not want to see the end of fossil fuels because they know it's going to just jack up prices. Also, patriotism. It wasn't cool to be pro-American. It was cool. It wasn't cool to comment on athletes taking a knee. Do you realize both parties have come around on crime, on border, on responsible drilling and patriotism? Don't you think that's a good sign?
Brian, there's two ways to look at it. One is that somehow these issues changed. I can tell you climate hasn't changed. Take a look at what's happening to our country in flooding and going on. Climate hasn't changed.
Well, what about the issues from politics?
Enough,
from politics.
If you attack it enough with self-righteousness, you can move the country. So I don't think that.
But Howard, can I just stop you there? I'm not talking about, you know, let's let the scientists debate it out on with the global warming and global cooling, whatever. I'm just talking about as an issue with AI. If you think that through solar panels, we're going to be able to keep our grid together, and without gas and oil and coal to a degree, we're going to be able to keep this country and the lights on. That's an impractical approach. You could say it if you're AOC. We're going to get rid of all of it. But then when the Americans see their utility prices go up, when they see the rolling blackouts in Los Angeles, and we see that Gavin Newsom's got himself in a whole lot of trouble banning gas cars, that's an impractical approach to this country. If you bring that up now, don't expect to win an election, correct?
No, but the Barack Obama was all of the above. It's not a question of all of the above. The question is, do you take carbon, your friends in the oil industry, and say, I'm going to destroy electric cars until Elon Musk switches and supports me, or I'm going to end offshore wind unless there's an offshore wind person who does that? Or do you say energy is the most important issue of our time? We can't have too much. We should keep nuclear. We have to continue to frack. Natural gas is important, but so is offshore wind, so is solar, so is electric vehicles, and we should be all in. And in any event, don't pick which one you like based on what your friends at Mar-a-Lago have their vested interest in.
Right. He, by the way, one of his friends at Mar-a-Lago has got the number one electric car company in the world. So if you think that he's going to destroy electric cars, he said that over and over again, Trump. He said,
well,
I have nothing against electric cars, but get rid of the subsidies.
Elon Musk,
but he says, get rid of the subsidies.
Well, he's going to have Vice President Musk control whatever his energy policy is going to be, and because he gives out to those who give to him.
So Dana Loesch, who we also had on stage in Richmond, had a great recommendation. Tell me if you agree. Cut 22.
One of the things I thought Vance did quite well during the last debate was he had a very good temperament, and he came across as a strong provider, not some like neurotic, you know, knucklehead, I guess, is what Walz calls himself. But he was able to be strong without being aggressive, assertive without being overpowering.
Yeah.
And he spoke to issues that women care about. They need to have, they should bring out the women more on the campaign trail. They need Patty Morin. They need Alexis Nungaray. They need Gianna Jensen. They need these women who can tell these stories because, quite frankly, and it's sexist, Laura, but the men can't do it.
Right. I think that if you were doing being an analyst, Howard, that's what I think one of the things the Trump campaign is missing.
I agree with you completely, but you got to remember the Trump campaign isn't it takes a village. The Trump campaign, the Trump government, it takes one person. Donald Trump doesn't like sharing the stage. I give the over under of Vance surviving with him as vice president 3 years. So I don't think he likes sharing the stage. It's great as long as you don't get too big for your britches. So if there's – and take a look. If there's nobody who's hung around with him that long and been by his side. Steve Ricchetti's been by Joe Biden's side for 40 years. Tony Blinken's been by – there's nobody who survived 4 years with Donald Trump. So, yes, do I think it would be fabulous to have surrogates out there believing in Donald Trump
surrogates? Well, these are victims, families from illegal immigrants who these murderers come across and just kill Americans.
Yes, I agree. And then you could have people like me who you took a gulp when I said, you know, I might have been a special assistant to the director of the FBI in the Meese administration. I might have been a U.S. ambassador. I might have been a Supreme Court clerk for Senator Dale Conner and Parr Stewart, but I'm a son of an illegal immigrant. And so that story is obviously much more gray than black or white.
Howard, everyone loves immigrants in this country, and even President Trump has said, I want legal immigration, more work visas. But Howard, your story after World War II with your father was very different than we're not in the middle of a world war. We're different people just breaching our border, feeding off our welfare system in various ways, invading our schools to the point where even Democrats can't talk about it, expect to get elected. They're using Trump in their ads because now Trump's message of 2016 has never been more relevant. It's going to be an interesting time, Howard. We'll talk to you again before the election. Thanks so much. Good luck on your show. All right, so 1-866-408-7669. When we come back, I'll be able to squeeze in some calls. and tell you what else is going on with both the candidates on the road today. And also, let's get ready for the World Series in Los Angeles. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. Just a quick note, if you listen on WOKV, I'm going to be February 15th. I'm going to be with History, Liberty, and Laughs in your town at this beautiful theater there, BrianKilmeade.com, to go get tickets. I want to see everyone in person. They're already selling extremely well. It'll bring history to life in a fun, entertaining, insightful way. And maybe we'll have a new president by then, and the inauguration will be done, and we'll be done with the Super Bowl. It'll be exciting. Hank, you're in Virginia. Hey, Hank.
Hey, Brian. How you doing, buddy?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, General Kelly and General Mattis, they're great Americans, but the timing is kind of odd because, you know, there's a revolving door between the Pentagon and the defense industry. We had a great general named Eisenhower became president. He warned against the military-industrial complex. So that revolving door goes both ways, Pentagon, military-industrial complex. And I'm just kind of concerned about the timing of their statements.
No, I think you're very judicial saying concerned. It's intentional. They want to make sure that John Kelly loses. John Kelly wants to make sure Trump loses. But we found an interesting quote from John Kelly to NPR. NPR asked him, is there tension between you and President Trump? He said, the president and I are very close. My view is to speak the truth to power. I always give my opinion. He always listens. Sometimes he takes my opinion, sometimes he doesn't. The good thing about the president is he does listen. Generally speaking, he will have a group in there, a wide spectrum. So if it's taxes, you'll have someone who thinks you know very liberally about taxes and someone who thinks you're an arch conservative about taxes, a sprinkling of everyone in the middle. Doesn't sound like a guy like who thinks he wants to be Hitler or a dictator. So I'm just wondering why he feels compelled to talk to the Atlantic now. Know why? Because it looks like Trump's going to win. I'm not saying he's going to win. I'm saying he's winning. And they're beginning to panic. And it's really disappointing. Why generals are playing politics? It's just there is no place for it.
Top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world. This hour, I'm going to be joined by Mark Thiessen, standing by. Great to get his insight. And what about the game plan of the backstretch? Michael Whatley. Not only do I want to talk to him about the RNC focus, President Trump's focus, the rest of the chances of keeping the House. I know there's two seats in New York that are problematic for Republicans, Senate, and also North Carolina. I mean, that's where he's from. I mean, that's where his background is. And with the devastating hurricane, it's changed everything about the calculus. It's probably going to be a 2-point state. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We'll see what the Russians and North Koreans decide to do here. As I said earlier, if these North Korean soldiers decide to join the fight against Ukraine, they will become legitimate military targets.
I think you're missing the story, Admiral John Kirby. North Korea, the Army, not only supplying artillery, but actually personnel to fight for Ukraine. Your move, NATO, West, I think it's time to step up. Is Joe Biden going to react to anything? Still contemplating releasing restrictions on weapons the American people allocated for the Ukrainians. It is insane how bad their foreign policy is.
Number two.
I speak with not only sincerity, but with a real firsthand account of watching him do this work. I have no reluctance in saying that. No, of course I don't.
Really? Someone's not telling the truth. More questions about how bad Joe Biden's mental health is as the cover-up continues and the VP won't own up to it. Bob Woodward in his book chronicles more alarming behind-the-scenes failures of the current president, which makes me wonder, are we not only in bad hands, but are we in no hands?
Number one.
It is clear from John Kelly's words that Donald Trump is someone who, I quote, certainly falls into the general definition of fascists. Donald Trump is increasingly unhinged and unstable.
Yes, that's the game plan. Make Trump unelectable. Don't worry about me. Harris pounces on John Kelly's accusations about President Trump and his love for dictators and fascists and Hitler, and goes out and decides. And meanwhile, she meanders through a town hall on CNN. Friendly questions. She just didn't have any concise answers. Mark Thiessen joins us now. Mark, first off, on John Kelly coming out now, you and I both have respect for Kelly and Mattis. Who wouldn't? But now the timing, the insight, the story, what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I thought she was going to win the presidency on joy and vibes.
Yep.
What happened to the joy? The only one person I see campaigning on joy is Donald Trump, who was absolutely joyful as he was salting those fries at McDonald's the other day. You know, he's campaigning on a positive message about lifting America up. Making America great again. He seems happy. He seems enthusiastic. And her body English is that of a loser. You know, this is not how you campaign if you think you're winning the election. I think one, you know, the idea that Donald Trump is a fascist, that he said that the Americans who disagree with him are enemies from within, and that he would use the U.S. military against them, which is her closing message. One, it's all lies. He's not a fascist. He didn't say Americans who disagree with him are enemies from within, and he didn't say he'd use the military against them. But two, it reeks of desperation. You know, this is not how a campaign that's cruising to victory behaves.
Well, that's true, and I want to get to that. But I want to get you to, what do you think the damage of John Kelly's comments are? And I'll play some of them from The Atlantic. They also recorded it. It's not the best quality in the world. But Kelly was talking about the president, who I also have him here praising the president, but that seems to have been forgotten. Here's a little of Kelly.
Certainly, the former president is in the far right area. He's certainly an authoritarian, admires people who are dictators. He has said that. So he certainly falls into the general definition of fascist, for sure.
If he was left to his own devices, would he be a dictator if he didn't have people around him?
Oh, I think he'd love to be. I think he'd love to be just like he was in business. He could tell people to do things and they would do it, and not really bother too much about whether.
All right, so that's the spirit of what he's done. You make sense of that.
I can't. It's ridiculous. I mean, first of all, you know, Trump is not a dictator. He wasn't a dictator in his first term. So we have an entire first term by which to judge him, and he didn't behave like a dictator. First of all, when he did do things, he listened to the Supreme Court. When the Supreme Court, you know, ruled against him, he obeyed the Supreme Court. You know, even on January 6th, he left office. He didn't try and stay after Congress certified the election. He left, and Joe Biden took over with disastrous result for America. And all the reason he left office is because our founders created a system of checks and balances. You know, all the state election officials did their jobs. All the state legislatures did their jobs in sending the electoral votes to Congress. Congress did its job in certifying the vote. The vice president did his job. The courts did their job in looking at Trump's claims and ruling against him, including the Trump-appointed 6-3 majority in the Supreme Court. There's so many fail-safes in our system to protect against anyone who would even try to be a dictator. That it's absurd, and right. There's no evidence that Trump would try to become a dictator.
This is what I find so disappointing. This is what I found so disappointing. There are people that are anti-Trump, they were anti-Bush, there's not many anti-Obama Democrats, but maybe there were some. With the timing, he's there to do maximum damage in a job that's not supposed to be political. Former chief of staff, and I looked up, and what about this interview in NPR? The question is there tension between you and Donald Trump? John Kelly, the answer. The president and I have a very close relationship. My view is to speak truth to power. I always give my opinion on everything. He always listens. Sometimes he takes my opinion, sometimes he doesn't. Generally speaking, we will have a group in there on all different spectrums. And he talks about how have a conservative talk about tax policy and everything. He went on to say he's very smart, a very smart guy. I mean, a super smart guy. But I think it would surprise you to know that. But I think it wouldn't surprise you to know he's very strong. He's very strong in terms of trade, taxes, business, and he's a quick study on everything else. He's a pretty bright guy. Okay, which is true? What is true?
Well, I think the latter comments came after January 6th. And so, you know, which was horrific what happened on January 6th.
No, but the latter comments are him complimenting Trump.
The comments came where he said the things about Trump being a dictator came after January 6th. So I think January 6th changed a lot of people's views of Donald Trump. And I respect that. I respect people who look at that and say, look, I can't support the guy after January 6th. There's some Republicans who feel that way. I look at that and I say, show me the benign alternative. Right. I mean, we got the most radical left wing nominee in the history of the country.
Who's totally incompetent.
I believe everything she said she would do in 2019 is what she wants to do. She's going to have a dramatic Congress. If she wins, she will have a Congress that will push her to be even more left wing than Joe Biden ever was. If she controls the Senate while also winning, they're going to get rid of the filibuster. They're going to pack the Supreme Court. They're going to add D.C. as a state and add two safe Democratic Senate seats. And they're going to pass their entire radical agenda with a simple majority without compromise or any effort to try and achieve consensus. I look at that and say that's a much bigger threat. Then even if you believed all the worst things that people like John Kelly are saying about Donald Trump, that's a much worse threat than the worst imaginable, you know, version of Donald Trump checked by all the fail safes in our system.
So I want you to hear what Nikki Haley just in this moment just tweeted out. Thanks to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, there is chaos in the world. The debacle they're creating in Afghanistan emboldened our enemies. Russia invaded Ukraine. Iranian proxies started a war with Israel. China threatens Taiwan daily. Make no mistake, American national security is at risk if Kamala Harris becomes president. Nobody went at it harder at Trump than Nikki Haley. She's endorsed him, showed up at the RNC. Yeah. I hope they get together by the end of the week because it can't be about personality. It's got to be about policy. And lastly, Mark, I just cannot go this segment and not ask you about North Korea fighting with the Russians in Ukraine. And Admiral Kirby says, well, it shows how desperate they are. Excuse me. Are you missing the story here, Admiral Kirby? Your thoughts?
Well, both can be true. Russia is desperate in pulling in the North Koreans and also that we now see a axis, what Bush called an axis of evil coming to life in Ukraine, where you have North Korea, you know, and all the people who say, oh, this is just Europe. We need to focus on the Pacific, right? The Pacific is coming to Europe. Our enemies in the Pacific are literally now fighting on European soil.
Great point.
The idea that North Korean soldiers are fighting on European soil and that these are somehow separate threats that we can just carve up and we can throw Ukraine under the bus and hope that nothing that doesn't spread to this is we have a global axis between North Korea, China, Russia, and Iran. They are united. They have formed an alliance. And they are threatening us all across the world. We got wars going on two continents, and we could have a war in a third if we don't elect a president who is going to prevent that from happening.
But I mean, to me, this is surreal. You have a North Korean. You know that Japan and Germany didn't coordinate; they just felt the same way. These guys are coordinating. So, you know,
Japanese troops in Europe fighting with Hitler.
Yeah. So now we have North Korea reporting for duty. What are they getting in return? What are they getting in return? And now we're pressuring China because we say we know what you're up to. You're giving them weapons to fight in Ukraine while saying you're neutral. Really? Strong words to China at this point? I'm wondering when we're going to get serious. Nick Burns came out and made a statement yesterday as ambassador to China. There's nobody in charge. There's nobody, Mark. There's no president that would take this casually. Our Secretary of Defense says it's desperation. But the bigger problem is they have millions of fighters. If you put all the thousands of North Koreans in with Russia, they will run over Kyiv. Are we going to allow that?
Don't know. I don't know the answer to that. What would help is not letting them get into Ukraine in the first place by allowing the Ukrainians to fire our missiles into Russian territory where the North Koreans are. That might be a good idea. To allow take out the North Koreans before they're able to enter Ukrainian territory. This administration is so incompetent. If they had given the Ukrainians everything they're giving them now, but done it in the first few months after Putin failed to take Kyiv in the first place, the war would have ended 2 years ago, and Ukraine would have won. It's just utter incompetence on the part of this administration. And we need a change of command.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it, because she could not answer if she would put up the border wall. She would not answer this simple question. Who would be a better friend to Israel, Trump or you? She wouldn't answer that question. You should not be president if you can't answer these softball questions. They're softball questions unless you don't want to answer. And Anderson Cooper, to his point, and Hallie Jackson, to her credit, would have just followed up and say, just tell me what you think. And she would not do it. This is in it. You cannot be president if you won't answer these questions. I hope the American people would demand more.
Well, her non-answer is an answer. You know, I mean, the fact that she won't say what she's doing is because she knows the American people disagree with her, and she's trying to turn the topic back to Donald Trump. She will be the most radical left-wing president our country has ever had. If she's elected, and she wants to mask that, you know, she's already backtracking through aid. They were backtracking on fracking. She's going to wage a war on fossil fuels. She's going to do all the things that the Democrats wanted to do under Biden, but couldn't do because of Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, who will be gone. If you thought the Biden administration was bad, Kamala Harris is going to be Biden on steroids. And she doesn't want to answer the question because she doesn't want to have to answer the American people.
Mark Thiessen, thanks so much. Exciting time. 12 days and counting. Right now,
amazing.
My belief is Trump is winning but hasn't won. Do you feel the same way?
I think he is winning. But it's all within the margin of error right now. The difference is it was within the margin of error for Harris a few months ago, and now it's within the margin of error in favor of Trump, which means it's moving in his direction. But 2 in 10 voters in the swing states have not made a firm decision yet. So it's both very tight and very fluid, and it could easily stay very tight, or it could break in the final days towards Trump. But we don't know which it's going to be. And really, get Nikki Haley out there to make the case to these reluctant Trump voters to pull the lever for him.
Go get him. Mark Thiessen, thanks so much.
Take care.
And we know the president of the United States the former president of the United States has a plan for today. Where will he be? President Trump will make remarks at a campaign rally in Tempe, Arizona. At 10 o'clock tonight, he'll be a turning point again in Las Vegas, Nevada. And then we know Sunday it's going to be a highly charged rally at Madison Square Garden. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Welcome back, everybody. Danny, you're in Israel. Danny, what's on your mind?
Hi, Brian. Hi. Thank you for having me. I just wanted to comment about the outrageous comparison between Hitler or Nazism to President Trump. You know, for us, the Jewish people, the Nazism and Holocaust, it's a symbol. It's a symbol of our existence. And what the Democrats are doing, they actually are profaning that symbol, using it to, you know, political outrageous matters. Now, look just at the President Trump. He recognized Jerusalem as the eternal capital of Israel.
Yep.
Okay, he has a Jewish daughter. Mm-hmm. And Jewish grandchildren, Orthodox Jewish. Now, look at this quote. What is this quote? They are recognizing those who are chanting from the river to
Absolutely.
The
sea. Absolutely. They're anti-Semitic. They hate you guys.
They are burning Israeli flags and American flags. So the question is, who is here more similar to Nazism than Hitler? I leave it for you, to answer that question.
But people that know him know there's not an anti-Semitic cell in his body. But it doesn't mean he's not going to get mad at the prime minister. It doesn't mean they're not going to disagree. It doesn't mean you're anti-Semitic or anti-Israel. But I believe that he's a great friend to Israel. They understand who the good guys are. And the best thing to happen to the Palestinian people and the Lebanese people is the end of Hezbollah and Hamas. This way they can get a degree of freedom and do what Egypt, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia is doing. And that's build a life and understand Israel is not your problem, but can be your friend.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Green, what did the president mean when he said last night about Donald Trump, we got along with Trump?
So look, the president spoke about this very clearly as well in his statement, and he said he meant lock him out politically. Lock him out. He made very clear yesterday that he was referring to defeating Donald Trump. That is what he was talking about. He said politically lock him out. That is what he was referring to.
It's KJP spinning, which they do. Every press secretary does. But Joe Biden said lock him up, seriously. And it also is indicative of the fact that there was methods behind the scenes to make sure he was never the nominee. You cannot tell me that there wasn't a coordinated effort with Jack Smith, what's happening in Georgia, what's happening with Tisha James in New York. And now we find out that Nathan Wade, who worked for Fannie Willis, who was working there, met three times because he billed for it with White House officials. There was coordination. And then you have the president say, yeah, we want to lock him up. Well, yeah, you tried, and you're not really making much sense these days, Mr. President, but maybe there you told the truth by mistake. Michael Whatley joins us now, RNC chair. Michael, welcome back. How do you feel about everything?
Well, I feel cautiously optimistic right now. I think that we're leading in every battleground state. More importantly, we're leading on every issue poll for the issues that the American voters care about, and President Trump is in the last 12 days here making an argument that he is going to rebuild our southern border, restore our economy, and ensure that we're strong enough to protect the United States and our allies around the world. Kamala Harris is in free fall. They are flailing right now. They do not have a message. There is nothing in her record that they can point back to and say that we've done it over the last 4 years. This is why they have tried to lock up President Trump. This is why they went after him with lawfare. They tried to take him off the ballot. They tried to put him in jail. They tried to take him off the campaign trail and tie him up in court. It has not worked. And Kamala Harris has absolutely nothing to fall back on right now other than making completely baseless claims about President Trump and his character, which are completely unmatched by the experience of everybody who has worked with him in the White House and is willing to speak on the record right now. So I would have to say overall, I really like where Donald Trump is, and I would be flailing if I were Kamala Harris as well.
So I want you to hear, this is what's tough, I imagine, to go against her because you have no idea where she stands. For example, on transgenders, men playing in women's sports. What about transgender operations for prisoners? She's for that, but listen to her question and listen to their answer. Cut 12.
Do you believe that transgender Americans should have access to gender-affirming care in this country?
I believe we should follow the law. I mean, I think you're probably pointing to the fact that Donald Trump's campaign has spent tens of millions of dollars.
They're trying to define you on this.
Yes.
I'm asking you to define yourself, though. Just broadly speaking, what is your value? Do you believe they should have that access?
I believe that people, as the law states, even on this issue about federal law, that is a decision that doctors will make in terms of what is medically necessary. I'm not going to put myself in the position of a doctor.
Really? Is a doctor that makes that decision? Really?
Well, look, I mean, the fact is that Kamala Harris has been on the record vocally saying that she supports taxpayer-funded surgeries for illegal aliens and prisoners for sex change operations. The American people do not support that. The American people do not want boys and girls sports. They don't want men in women's locker rooms. This is an 80-20 issue. She's on the wrong side of it. No wonder she's trying to dissemble and she's trying to dodge.
So the big attack came out from John Kelly in The Atlantic. And Richard Goldberg, even though the Gold Star sister has pushed back and say this story about funeral costs and the president saying it's too much money is wrong. He offered to pay for the funeral and said the president has got their vote. There's a story in The Atlantic saying that the president was complaining that it's $60,000 to bury a soldier. So that story is being debunked by the family. But this story by John Kelly is actually him on camera saying it. You were not there. I was not there. But Kamala Harris made these remarks yesterday after this came out. And evidently, the John Kelly's claim is the president was saying that Hitler did some good things. Cut 24.
It is deeply troubling and incredibly dangerous that Donald Trump would invoke Adolf Hitler, the man who is responsible for the deaths of 6 million Jews and hundreds of thousands of Americans. All of this is further evidence for the American people of who Donald Trump really is.
So that's where she was definite, and that's the only thing she answered directly last night at the town hall. What's the reaction in your camp when this came out? Do you believe this is the October surprise?
Well, if it is, it's a pretty poor October surprise, and it is absolutely not going to work. Nobody has done more as president for the Israeli nation, for the Jewish people, than Donald Trump. He moved the embassy to Jerusalem. He recognized Golan Heights. He's the one that got the Abraham Accords moved through it. He has been a steadfast ally to the Jewish people, which is why we are seeing so much support from that community for him right now. John Kelly, it's disgraceful that he would come out and make a statement like this. Every single person who was in the White House with President Trump has refuted this story and said that they have never heard him say anything along these lines. For John Kelly to put this out 2 weeks before the election is an amazing self-aggrandizing story of sour grapes and truly is not going to have any resonance with the American people because it's not even remotely believable.
So I was just looking through John Kelly and what he said when he left the White House. And I don't know what's true then, the one he said last night, or this. He said on camera to NPR, President Trump is very strong in terms of trade, taxes, business. He's a quick study and everything else. He's a pretty bright guy. And he just goes on to compliment him. He also says that they get along great. My view is to speak truth to power. I always give my opinion on everything. He always listens. Sometimes he takes the opinion. Sometimes he doesn't. Where's he spinning? I mean, you can't have both. You can't feel both ways. Don't you agree?
I completely agree. You know, and I would go back to the comments that Mick Mulvaney, another White House chief of staff, who replaced John Kelly, said last night on TV that this is completely ridiculous. And it's born out of the fact that John Kelly hates Donald Trump and is being completely irrational here. Look, the fact is this election is going to be decided because American voters want a strong country. They want a strong economy. They want lower grocery prices, gasoline prices, and housing prices. Donald Trump is the only candidate in this race who is even talking about the issues that voters care about. Kamala Harris has to be reminded in every event, hey, there is an economy, there is inflation. She admits publicly, yeah, grocery prices are too high. You know why? Because she cast the tie-breaking vote on $2.5 trillion worth of inflationary spending. President Obama's own economic advisors told her, you're going to send inflation through the roof if you cast these votes. She did. So it is her fault that every American is suffering in the terms of the economy. As the borders are, she led the administration, 94 executive actions to dismantle the most secure southern border that we've ever seen. She has promised them that she's going to give them the right to vote. She's promised them free health care, free tuition, driver's licenses. Tim Walz said he's going to build ladders to get them over the wall. Right now, the American public does not support open borders. So this election is going to be decided on these issues and these baseless, groundless attacks that people are making to throw Hail Marys 12 days out from the election are not going to work because they're not believable. Democrats ran this playbook in 2008. They ran this playbook in 2012. In 2016 and in 2020. And it's not going to work any more than it did before.
So, Michael Wildley, there's a couple of things going on tactically. You guys decided to let the super PACs run your ground game. And I watched Jim Messina and Karl Rove on our air. Jim Messina famously worked with Obama, and Karl Rove worked with Bush. He's there. Karl Rove's a contributor. And they said that that's what Jim Messina says is their advantage. They say they both agree it's too close to call, and they think their superior ground game. What do you know about your ground game, and are you worried about it?
Well, I fundamentally disagree with the premise of the question. We have a very strong ground game right now that is operating in every single one of these battleground states across the country. What we have done is retooled our ground game instead of indiscriminately knocking on every door that we can. We are focused on turning out low propensity voters. That is already paying off, and we see it with the low propensity turnout in places like North Carolina, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Nevada already during the early vote and the absentee votes. We have been allowed to coordinate with the outside groups because the FEC issued an order allowing us to coordinate with those groups for the first time ever. We are thrilled to have Elon Musk, to have Turning Point, to have the National Rifle Association and AFP and other groups out in the field with turnout operations. They are a great complement to what we're putting in the field right now. But I think if any suggestion that the RNC has not been engaged in a ground game is not based on what we're doing right now to turn out the vote.
Do you don't feel like you're more supervising as opposed to past years with traditional way? And if this works, this could be the new model. But do you agree that this is a new model?
Well, the coordination is absolutely new, and we appreciate that. In terms of our operations, our field operations, the volunteers that we are recruiting and training, the fact that we are going after low propensity voters instead of indiscriminately knocking on every door, that is new. And it is actually going to work. We're seeing it work right now. And I do think that that's going to be a new model.
So right now, record-breaking early voting turnout in Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Wisconsin. And overall, Newsweek says the party affiliation goes 43-34. Why are Republicans happy with those numbers?
Because we're doing significantly better than we did in 2016 and in 2020. You know, for example, in North Carolina, as of close of business last night, Republicans have cast more votes early and absentee than Democrats. That has never happened before. In Pennsylvania, the Democrat margin is 25% of what it was, 4 years ago. So we're making significant gains. And we also know Republicans are going to dominate on Election Day. So, you know, overall, we remain cautiously optimistic. We've got a lot of work to do over the last 12 days. But the initial results that we're seeing on the ground in these battleground states show that our grassroots efforts are working.
We're talking to Michael Wildley. And by the way, I should clarify for our listeners, the Democrats are up 43-34. But I think the last time at this last cycle, it was around in the 20s. So what is the closing message? We know the president says he's going to have a closing message. We know the vice president is going to have a closing message at the Ellipse next Tuesday. Do you guys have something like that planned? It would be after MSG on Sunday, obviously. But then what? What could you tell our listeners?
Donald Trump is going to go out and directly communicate with every single American family, every single American voter about the issues that they care about. He is going to restore the southern border. He's going to rebuild our economy. And he's going to ensure that as a country, we are strong enough to protect our allies and our interests around the world. Those are the issues that the voters care about. Donald Trump is leading on every single one of those issues. So I think that you will continue to see him doing rallies. He's going to be on Joe Rogan and other platforms. He's going to continue to go on radio and TV and talk to every American on any platform that he can about, again, the issues they care about.
So I want you to hear with a celebrity, Michael Keaton, but he did play Batman, said about what he thinks Trump and Musk are really like. Cut 46.
Hey, hi, Michael. You know, for some of you folks who, guys mostly, I guess, who are thinking about attending a rally with Musk and Trump, they don't really respect you. They laugh at you behind your back. They think you're stupid. They don't want to hang out with you. They have nothing in common with you. They're not your bros. And I'm telling you, when Trump, years ago, I guess, said, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and they'd still vote for me, basically what he's saying in parentheses is, these people are so stupid, they're so dumb, they'd still vote for me. They have no respect for you. Trust me.
Do you think, where does that come from with Michael Keaton? Have you ever heard that before? What would you like to say to that?
I've never seen it. What I can tell you is I've been to 100 different rallies with Donald Trump over the last 10 years, and he connects with every single one of them, people that are attending those rallies. I have seen him interact with police officers, with soldiers, with families, you know, the Gold Star families that we saw at the convention that came to speak, the families of migrant crime victims that he spoke with. You know, Donald Trump connects with the American people, and there's a reason that they love him. And so, look, Michael Keaton, I don't know where he's coming from there. It sounds very bitter to me. Look, we're running a very upbeat campaign right now. Donald Trump is playing offense. He is communicating with people with a smile on his face, and he is doing rallies. He is doing social media hits. He's out there all across the country. And I'll add this, J.D. Vance, our choice for vice president, who grew up in rural, poor Appalachia in Ohio, who pulled himself up from the bootstraps, joined the military, then went to college on a GI Bill, has never forgotten where he is from. And right now in rural America, they are turning out in droves for Donald Trump and J.D. Vance because they are fighting for every American family.
Don't you feel that was pretty insulting?
Yeah, I think it was absolutely very insulting, you know, and the fact is that, you know, Trump has been on all of these different podcasts talking to different audiences across the board. What I think is insulting is seeing Barack Obama go out there and say, if you're a black man and you don't vote for Kamala, it's because you're a misogynist. I think the backlash that we have seen, even from people like Stephen A. Smith, has been warranted there. Mm-hmm. Right now, the Democrats are in free fall. They are flailing because they cannot talk about any single issue. The fact they don't have a closing argument right now, other than Trump is an evil man, trust me, does not really instill a lot of confidence in their campaign.
It's been an exciting run. No one's going to forget it. Everyone says it's too close to call, but you're feeling optimistic. Michael Whatley, thanks so much.
Yes, sir, Brian. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Back in a moment. I'm going to try to squeeze in some calls right after this. I know you have a lot to say. I see you on the lines. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, a little announcement. Tonight at 5:05 on 770 WABC. Now, we'll listen around the country. You can get it on WABC.com. Get the stream. John Casamatis and Rita Cosby will speak with President Trump. You can listen on 77 WABC on your local dial or WABC.com. So listen to it. It's going to be a great interview. And John Casamatis and Trump and Rita, they've been friends for years. So you're going to get a very intimate interview there. Gary in Daytona, Florida. Hey, Gary.
Good morning, Brian. I think Kamala is the face of the that $1 billion cannot make you an authentic person, and she's proven that. Where with Hillary, $750 million of a billion could not make her likable. The other thing I just wanted to comment in here about was I wish Trump would push back on his staff or people that she's always raising the point that 52 economists have said that Trump's plan will not work. And we've heard that before with the rush of 50 intelligence people.
Yes. You know, yeah. 51. Keep in mind, 51, Gary. Absolutely. Forget a Nobel laureate. One works for their campaign. His best friends with her brother-in-law.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world. Special thanks to the former president for joining us yesterday. We always appreciate when he comes on. I think it's respect for our audience, and I think that's great. Also, a quick note, too. One of our great affiliates, WABC, Rita Cosby and John Katsimatidis have a great show at 5 o'clock. He's going to be on with them today. And if you're not in New York or the surrounding area, just go to WABC.com, and you can listen to it on the stream. So we'll also take some of your calls. So we have Charles Payne coming up this hour and Caitlin Sinclair, official spokesperson for Turning Point, who just hosted the president and will host him again today. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We'll see what the Russians and North Koreans decide to do here. As I said earlier, if these North Korean soldiers decide to join the fight against Ukraine, they will become legitimate military targets.
Oh, wow. Look out. I think the bigger story is North Korea is fighting in Europe. It's unbelievable. They are going to help out the Russians. Yeah, the Russians obviously lost, they say, 500,000 men. Let's say that's higher in the ballpark. The fact that they're asking another country from with the new axis of evil is insane. And what is North Korea getting in exchange?
Number two.
I speak with not only sincerity, but with a real firsthand account of watching him do this work. I have no reluctance in saying that. No, of course I don't.
He is a fascist, is what she's saying. Someone's not telling the truth. More questions about how bad Joe Biden's mental health is right now, as Bob Woodward's book reveals that he has a couple of freezing moments, really awkward moments, unable to finish a sentence. People think that he looks like death behind the scenes. You know that she saw that. When is she going to be forced to tell the truth?
Number one.
It is clear from John Kelly's words that Donald Trump is someone who, I quote, certainly falls into the general definition of fascist. Donald Trump is increasingly unhinged and unstable.
Nice. Harris pounces on John Kelly's accusations about Donald Trump and his love, they say, for dictators and fascists. John Kelly also said some other things to his chief of staff, very complimentary. What are we to believe? Charles Payne joins us now, getting set to host his show today, 2 o'clock, like he does Monday through Friday every day. Charles, welcome back.
It's great to be back.
All right, so Charles, from yesterday, we got this question to Kamala Harris, and it's the most fundamental question. And everybody knows inflation is the number one issue. And when asked about what would you do to reduce inflation, I was shocked to see that she really had no answer. Cut five.
Grocery prices have gone up quite a bit in the last 4 years, and some people blame former President Trump. Some people blame President Biden. Who would you say is correct, and what would you do to bring prices down for Americans?
Thank you, Eric, and you're absolutely right. You know it, I know it, I think most Americans know it. Price of groceries is still too high, and we need to address it in a number of ways. One of my aspects of doing what we need to do to bring down the cost of living for working people and the middle class in America is to address the issue of grocery prices. Part of my background and how I come to it is probably a new approach grounded in a lot of my experiences as a former attorney general, where I took on price gouging.
And that's what you guessed it. But would it take, Charles, 3 minutes to get the price gouging? Now, that's like saying we got to stop shoplifting.
Right.
We all know there shouldn't be gouging and shoplifting, whatever. Is that the answer you're hoping for?
Well, first of all, where's the gouging?
I don't know.
Right. I mean, I think if we start by saying, hey, let's start with gouging, then we give her a little credibility. I think she deserves zero on this. First and foremost, what was the question? Which president is responsible for this? That was the question. And without anyone, listen, you can't even deny that this was the creation of the Biden-Harris campaign. And again, they were warned. There were at least three Obama officials.
Larry Summers.
Them. Right. Ratner was worried, and there was another one. They were all really worried about this, right? Like, hey, you know, it's really comes down to basic human.
Furman was
right.
The other.
And it comes down to basic human instincts, right? And so if you put $2 or $3 trillion into an economy that does not need it, I think this is the most important point. Our economy did not need the money. Household balance sheets were the best they'd ever been. I'm saying ever. There was already $600 billion on the way from that last tranche that Trump pushed through. And by the way, we didn't need that either. Trump needed it before the election, and his buddy who ran the Senate didn't help him out.
Wait until December.
Right. So he waited until after the election, right? Trump could have gotten elected probably if they'd have put it out 2 weeks before the election. That was, you know, politics. So you've got $600 billion coming in. You had another $2 trillion, again, that we don't need. And what happens? People get this money and they start spending the heck out of it. Not just that money, Brian, they spent their own money because that's what they do. It's a psychological thing that by the way, every time the government does this, they know you're going to do it. It's called propensity to consume. And everyone has it. The lower 48% of income folks usually do it the first day. And every time, every crisis that we've had, you've seen, and it, by the way, both parties, they've increased the number of money, but no one ever thought to go $2 trillion, right? This is Rahm Emanuel. You got a crisis, take advantage of it. How often do we get a once-in-a-century crisis? Do something we never thought possible. Go $2 trillion. But since then, they've layered on the Inflation Reduction Act. They've layered on the CHIPS Act. They've layered on this and that. So since then, there's another couple trillion dollars. Not only is Biden-Harris responsible for it, but they are the main reasons why it won't go down. The pace of inflation has slowed. Inflation prices have not come down.
So, Charles Payne, our guest. Charles, when they say the tax cuts for under Trump were for billionaires, the Trump's billionaire friends, how accurate is that?
Google Trump taxes benefits and then put The Hill in there. The Hill has an article. Everyone's written articles about it. But the reason I say that, that's probably the quickest way to find it. That it benefited everyone. In fact, they put out an article, and this is years ago, that it might have benefited lower-income folks more than rich people because it's a tax cut for anyone paying taxes. Right? So it was an across-the-board tax cut.
Which is 49% of the country or 51%?
Well, yeah, you know, at the time, like half the country pays taxes and half doesn't. And if you pay taxes, you got a tax cut. That's the bottom line. And by the way, This notion that somehow the money we earn belongs to the government and that whatever they allow us to keep, we should be thankful for it. You know, it's interesting. You start getting the terms like dictator and fascist in that. That really is more toward what real fascist economics is all about. That's what Mussolini put in place. And you know, that sort of thinking. We've actually adopted it, at least the Democratic Party has, but more and more Americans are sort of, who's going to pay for the tax cuts? No, what do you mean pay for them? No one should ever have to pay for them. This is their money. It belongs to people who earned it. The way you offset it is spend less.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's just it. How much are we over budget? The deficit, is it?
This last $1.8 trillion.
This year.
Yeah. The $1.8 trillion is the highest, it's the third highest in history. The only two that were higher, of course, were associated with COVID. We've gone $800 billion.
Is it with this fiscal year?
Yeah,
this last fiscal year. September.
Yeah, yeah.
So it used to be, I thought, like on an average time, we were about $500 billion. We thought was a lot.
Yeah.
Clinton actually balanced that at the zero.
Right.
So with Newt Gingrich, because they worked together. So you cut spending, I'll cut this, and next thing you know, they're down to zero. So there's no way we get that down without massive growth or social program cuts.
Right.
Nobody wants to say that.
Or both. Right. Or both. Right. That's always been the political third rail, to your point. It would have to take some very brave people who don't want a career in Washington, D.C.
How about a one-term president with nowhere to go at 70?
Exactly.
Years old?
Exactly. It would take someone who really, really is not looking to stay in Washington any longer than their current term. And that really, truly wants to leave a real, true legacy. I mean, Reagan had that sort of, you know, when Reagan came in, he took a lot of heat. He and Paul Volcker, they did some things together, who was in charge of the Federal Reserve, that were very painful at the time. But it was cathartic at the end of the day because it washed out massive inflation and allowed us to grow for years and years and years. And that's what you call shared prosperity.
When you look at Kamala Harris, and she says that she is going to raise the corporate tax rate up to 28%. And people say those corporations can afford it. Charles, what does it actually mean?
Well,
they're at 21%.
Right, they're 21%. She has said in the past, by the way, just so you know, that she really in her heart of hearts would like to go to 35%.
Which was above where it was?
Yeah, she's talked about that many times in the past. All the most developed nations in the world have seen over the last 20 years, their corporate tax rates have come down. They've come down, in fact, very, very dramatically. There's two things I'm thinking here. One, that they may not ever do it if she were to win. Look at the majority of her contributions right now. I think this might be more campaign rhetoric than anything else. In fact, corporate America, the educated elite, the top 1% in corporate America, never had a better president than Harris and Biden because of all that money I just talked about. When you flood an economy with trillions, not billions, trillions of dollars, guess what? It goes in corporate coffers. It goes to the bottom line. It sends the stock market up. People get fat dividend checks. People get fat annuity checks. People who own stocks have the wealth effect. The top 20% of Americans right now do 40% of the spending. And ironically, when they spend that money, it keeps interest rates up, so they even get more. Their next dividend check is even bigger. Mm-hmm. Never in the history of our country has there been an administration this friendly to the ultra wealthy. And so I'm not. I think there's one thing. I don't think she would do anything with it if she were to win, because she is. This is the campaign of the. This is the party of the wealthy now. I know there's this sort of, you know, mythology that, you know, maybe at one point they were about blue collar workers. But right now, they're 100% in the camp of big-time Wall Street folks and big the wealthy elite.
You know, we talked about this a little bit one other time about corporate housing. So BlackRock and others, they decided, hey, why don't we just buy up all these houses from people? Why don't we fix them up, and then we own them? It's impossible for you to own them. And you said this is infiltrating on the middle-class dream, the working-class housing. And it's really hurt the market. You think any politician should be talking about this?
Well, I you know, you do have more and more in the fringes, like the Elizabeth Warrens of the world. But, you know, she's messed up her credibility so bad that nobody listens to her. The Wall Street side, the argument on the Wall Street side is, well, people really, that the myth of owning a house is not necessarily the best investment in the world. Right. There are other places to make more money. People don't understand housing. Things go wrong. There's a housing pit, whatever you want to call it. I still think it's a core foundational thing for most of the people. They just feel great. You wake up in your house that you own.
We have a housing shortage. That is true, correct?
We have a housing shortage. There's no doubt about it. The problem, though, when we say that, though, is that we take it as an aggregate. There's a housing shortage in the hip cities and places people want to be. But right now, then what happens is when everyone moves there, we built a bunch of houses. Then we have a housing, too many houses, right? So if you look at Austin, Texas, parts of Florida, it's actually now, you know, they're going in housing slumps. So housing is one of the most localized assets out there. And it's really hard to talk about it, you know, from coast to coast. But overall, obviously, if you take something off the market, you make it unavailable, and you control the rents, it's great for Wall Street. It's great for these hedge funds, right, these asset management funds.
So I had a chance to talk to a former president yesterday. I asked him about this BRICS conference. 32 nations own a great deal of the population and potentially a lot part of the world economy. Russia's pushing for a de-dollarization of the economy. President Trump told me that's World War III. Are you, on the macro level, are you concerned about what's happening with these outlaw nations like Iran, Russia, South Africa in many cases, Brazil, at Russia, China,
right,
getting together as an answer to the G7.
Of course. The G7 is only America. So there's this thing called the SWIFT unit where the money circulates around the world. When Russia invaded Ukraine, we kicked Russia off the SWIFT unit, like, immediately. That scared the hell out of a lot of people, including allies, because they essentially say, well, no matter how egregious the action, If the United States can go in a room and flip a switch and we're out the system, then we're under their thumb. And so it's 36 countries. They represent 45% of the world's population, about 25% of GDP. And if you look for next year, IMF just came out with their numbers this week. Their average growth between these countries will be something on the level of like 7 or 8% GDP, whereas G7 nations will be something like 2 or 3%. And that's, again, take out America, they're all about 1% growth. Europe is dying. On that SWIFT unit, the dollar's going up a little bit, right, in terms of circulation, cross-country transactions. But the euro has plunged. Brian, no one's using the euro. It is plunging. The renminbi, the Chinese currency, is starting to turn up. India is the key country here. India is the largest democracy in the world, population. It's a young country. Extraordinarily intelligent, hardworking, eager. Everyone wants India. 2 days ago, India and President Shri Modi sat down, had some coconut drinks, and celebrated putting to bed a long-running border dispute. We are actually bringing countries together by our weakness. And
a lack of aggression to show people, you know, what matters, show friendship in trade.
Yeah, personnel. There's a lot of things that we're just doing wrong. Listen, here, it's hard to stay the preeminent
and
nation in the world.
India's tied with Russia. Well, they have a defense agreement.
Well, India got all that cheap oil, right? Well, remember, we thought we would bring Russia to their knees. Well, they found quick buyers of the oil, particularly India. India is buying so much Russian oil because they get it at a discount, right? And again, we don't want to anger India too much because you got this kind of, they're on the verge of being the largest, most populous country in the world. They speak English. It's a democracy. You know, like, we need India in our corner. G7 is nothing. I hate to say it. Europe has just shot themselves in the foot. We have to have a footing, a stronghold, mm-hmm. particularly in Asia, and it's got to be India.
Charles, who's going to be on the show?
Today, I've got
you,
James Bullard.
Okay.
James Bullard, a very influential former Fed official. Right. And right now, our fate is in the hands of Jay Powell, and probably no one has a greater insight to that than Jay Bullard.
All right, go get him. Charles Payne, look for his show on FBN, one of my favorite networks, at 2 p.m. today. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Let's go right to the phones. Tony in Albany. Hey, Tony. Tony, you think immigration's number one, right? We might have lost Tony. My bad. All right, so I'm not sure we'll be able to squeeze in a call with that little time. But let me just tell you, coming up next, we're going to be talking about what's happening with the former president of the United States. He had a wild rally yesterday. Turning Point Organization is going to be hosting him again today, this time in Arizona. And he's going to be delivering remarks at a rally there. He's going to be delivering remarks in Arizona first. Then he's getting in a plane, going to Las Vegas to address that super PAC Turning Point. But the thing that's so encouraging about them, and I've spoken to them too, is they're basically in high school and college. And then you have other people in a major event like this who are going to see the president, going to ask to get involved. For J.D. Vance, he's going to deliver remarks at a campaign event in Michigan. Harris is and Barack Obama deliver remarks at in Atlanta, Georgia. One event. Are you kidding? And then Waltz has got like 10. Durham, North Carolina. Greenville, North Carolina. Wilmington, North Carolina. He's got another appointment, and then he's over to Philadelphia to close out the day. Problem is, Tim Waltz, no one takes him seriously, in my view. I mean, do you really think, in retrospect, she's glad she picked him? He's an embarrassment.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
These are acts of desperation. She can't win on the border. She can't win on the economy. She can't win on crime. She can't win on any major issue. So her last desperate grab is to smear Trump with things which are patently a lie. I mean, every American watched Donald Trump as president for 4 years. When he was impeached, he accepted the impeachment and went right into the Senate to fight it. When he was stopped from doing things he wanted in the Congress, he accepted it because he understood the balance of power. There is no evidence, none, in his 4 years as president that he resembles in any way this kind of weird attack that Kamala's made.
And she calls him a fascist, and John Kelly says, yeah, I guess that's the definition, and that's what they were dealing with yesterday, although Donald Trump didn't mention it, just put something on Truth Social. Caitlin Sinclair is here, official spokesperson for Turning Point, and the first Turning Point
that's
Action
right.
Committee. So, Caitlin, great to see you. Last night, Duluth, and today, the president's doing another Turning Point event.
Yeah, that's right. That one will be down in Vegas. And these are massive events with huge turnouts with the young voters, Brian, right. Because this election season, I don't know if all your listeners know this, but the young bloc, so the millennials and the Gen Zers, those two voting blocks are the largest voting blocks in this election cycle. You have 16 million new Gen Zers that are mm-hmm. eligible to vote. That's massive. 41 million Gen Zers total. And I think the left has really discounted how much these voting blocks will matter. So we're targeting all the young folks, and that's who's been showing up at these rallies.
Right. And I think you had Tucker Carlson was there last night.
That's right.
Yeah. So
it was the mother of all Trump rallies, which Carly Kirk coined that phrase.
And how many people were there roughly, do you think?
I wasn't there, unfortunately. So I have to get numbers. But
it was big.
It was massive.
So you have the president. He's kind of going through the tape. And today there's only one event with President Obama and, for the first time, Vice President Harris. Mm-hmm. Does that surprise you that she's not busier?
Well, look, she took 2 days off the other day to prepare for a pre-taped interview. When you have Donald Trump doing maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 events a day, 5 or 6 interviews. He does podcasts. Mm-hmm. He sits down with pretty much anyone. And then Kamala Harris has the nerve to call Donald Trump exhausted and weak.
Right.
And I think this is one of those campaigns where the more she goes out, Brian, the more she talks to the American people. I think her campaign actually wants to hide her.
So how do you – one of the strategies is make Donald Trump seem so unelectable. Whatever, yeah. Whatever you think of me, I'm so much better than the old guy, the 78-year-old. How does the former president battle that?
I think just what he's doing, being out there in front of the American people. I don't think there's an American Democrat or Republican, right or left, that looks at a man like Donald Trump and thinks that age actually matters. In his situation, this is a vibrant, energetic man
right.
who really seems to resonate with the American people.
What about Bruce Springsteen? And how old are you?
I'm 28.
28. Bruce Springsteen, is he big in your age group?
Definitely not. Definitely not relevant. I don't know.
He's campaigning now.
I don't know how relevant he is to age groups above me, to be honest. I didn't even know that he still mattered. Not that any of these celebrities still matter, right? I just read something this morning, Brian, that said that the Kamala Harris camp paid Lizzo over $2 million for one performance to come basically twerk on stage. That's the message we're sending to my generation. That's great. Over $2 million. Can you imagine the impact that money could have had on some of these hurricane victims right now, Americans that are actually struggling? So just so out of touch to have these celebrity endorsements and pulling people like Bruce Springsteen and Bill Clinton out of retirement. I don't know how much that's helping.
Here's a little of the event yesterday. And you could hear the crowd was happy the former president was there. Cut 21.
Remember, she was the border czar. She doesn't like saying that, but she was the border czar. And even if she wasn't, she was in charge of the border. Do you know, I asked the Border Patrol, did she ever call? Not once. I spoke to the top 10 guys. Did any of you? I know them very well. They're phenomenal people, by the way. They want to have a great, strong border. They hate. You know, it's easier for them. Let them pour in. Who the hell needs to get hurt? Because it's a rough deal. These are rough people. And I said, did she ever call? Not once. Not one of them ever received a call. She admits it. She never called them.
So that's something she can't shake.
No, and she can't shake the Border Patrol Council just recently endorsing Donald Trump for president. Funny when your borders are and you can't even get those 16,000 members to endorse you, right? Weird right. how that works. And how impactful and powerful that was, that endorsement happened in the state of Arizona.
So a lot of people did go to college and they spend sometimes private college $70,000. They want to go to that school. They got in. They took out a loan. Maybe their parent took out a loan. So they look at it and go, I'm buried in debt. Whatever job I'm taking, it's an entry-level job. Got to get a second. It's a legitimate problem. Sometimes you, as a parent, you want to do everything possible to get your middle-class child into a great institution. It costs it through the roof. So when Joe Biden says, I'm gonna forgive student loans, what is the counter message to that?
Well, look, I think this is the Democrats are notorious for doing this. And we see it right now with Kamala Harris on the campaign trail. You're promising young people, because they're targeting young people with this, of course. You're promising us it's empty promises and they do not deliver. And what message does that send to the young folks that had parents that worked really hard, or the young folks that put themselves through college
right.
and have worked to already pay off that debt? So now Kamala Harris wants to promise us, I'll give you money if you have kids. I'll pay for your first baby stroller. Okay, that's great. She's promising Black Americans, I'll give you weed, free marijuana, I'll make it legal. I mean, where were you guys for the past 4.5 years or 3.5 years? I don't think Americans are falling for it. And young people, definitely. Here's the thing, Brian. I don't think the left has taken this into account. Young people, the young cohort voting groups, have grown up in a digital age. We grew up with social media. We grew up with dating apps. We can tell in 1 second when something is edited, photoshopped, and we can sniff out a manufactured persona. Kamala Harris is the ultimate catfish, except instead of just wasting one bad date night on her, the American people would have to pay for 4 years of hell. So I think the left is undermining that when it comes to young people here.
So that's interesting to find out. What do you think the top three issues are then for your generation?
Well, time and time again, by and large, when I travel to these college campuses, These young people are coming out and, first of all, staunch support of Donald Trump. Right. It's no longer the case where you're afraid to wear a MAGA hat on campus. But the number one issue is inflation. It's jobs. It's the economy. When you have a future that offers really zero chance at the American dream right now, that's troubling to these young people. So it's jobs and the economy. It's inflation. And then it's the open border.
What is Turning Point's role in getting out the vote? Because they pretty much are dominating the ground game.
We are.
This is one of the first. This is a new model. So Michael Whatley was just on with us and said, yeah, we're doing stuff, but we kind of license it out. How are you approaching it? How is it different from past years?
Yeah, sure. So this is a ground game that the Democrats have been notorious for, right? Early voting, door knocking, just having a strong foundation, doing the groundwork. So Turning Point Action, which is the C4 organization, we are targeting, or we have been targeting, the low propensity voters in this country. And when you look at the percentage of low propensity voters, they are actually Donald Trump supporters. They are just disenfranchised or not motivated to get out and vote. So what we've been doing is making sure that those people are registered to vote, have a plan to vote, because we don't win elections with massive rallies, with all these optics, with Twitter wars.
Right.
We win rallies by getting that piece of paper.
So tell everybody your background.
So my background, I was a correspondent based right here in Manhattan with One America News for 5 years. I started my career actually at CNN, believe it or not, right out of college. And so earlier this year, I decided, you know, being in an election year, I wanted to have a bigger voice when it came to my generation, the millennials, and the generation coming up behind me, the Gen Zers, because right now, we are longing for role models. Me and my contemporaries, we don't have any strong female, specifically, leaders to look up to right now. And I really wanted to, in whatever small part I could, represent that. And it's been amazing being with the Turning Point.
Kind of your idea. You know Charlie Kirk. And you say, hey, let me be a spokesperson for it.
Yeah, we were trying to find a role for my big personality and loud voice and New York grit, you know?
Right.
That's what we came up with.
So this is a very active organization in colleges, correct? How has that grown? When this election's over, they become a different type of organization, right?
Yeah, I mean, who knows what will happen. But as far as education on these college campuses, that will for sure continue. I mean, Charlie's so motivated. And we've really been having these we're doing the brainwash tour right now. We've had Vivek Ramaswamy come join us. Tulsi Gabbard was alongside Charlie earlier this week at a few of the campuses. And we're just educating people, right? Having that open dialogue, hearing people, because we have lost the art of listening in this country. And you have so many of these young college students that don't feel like they have a voice in their elected representatives. I mean, look at here in New York, in the Bronx, AOC, an elected representative, and most of the people in her own district said they have never seen her, don't even know where her office is, and can't get a hold of her. And that is just a microcosm of what we're hearing across the country.
You got a mayor here in New York City that's indicted.
You mean Mayor Nightlife?
Yeah, that's true. Letitia James, who's targeting all political enemies, first and foremost, the former president of the United States. That court could be overturned. So, I mean, there's a lot going on that people are disenchanted with. And I could see that for you to come out there, not only are you talking about what's happening with Turning Point, but you're talking about what's happening this election. So the conventional wisdom is he's got about a 2-point lead, according to the Wall Street Journal nationally. According to the battleground states, he's trailing by about 4 points as an aggregate. If you could separate them, we'll put them together. Your feeling about where this election is from when you talk to your people in your ground game?
Well, look, early voting, if you look at the numbers right now, is pretty much going really well for the conservative party. You look at a state like Nevada. again, polling so well with the early numbers, even in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And you look at some of those races in Pennsylvania and what's going on there.
More Republicans are getting closer to Democrats. They're supposed to win election day.
Right.
They're supposed to win election season, mm-hmm. in their view. Record-breaking early voting turnouts in Georgia, 1.5 million. Michigan, 1.3. North Carolina, 1.7.
Massive.
I know. Wisconsin, 500,000. Early voting turnout by party, 43-34, which is dramatically different and better than 2020 when mm-hmm. President Trump said, don't trust it. Wait for Election Day, which is problematic because of the pandemic.
It was, Brian, and we've all definitely alluded to this point where conservatives went wrong, where the Republican Party went wrong in 2020. We told everyone to vote on Election Day, right? Stay home, go out and vote on Election Day, something that Republicans have done for decades. And mm-hmm. again, this is a game that Democrats have dominated, but no longer. This is the movement. You've talked to Michael Whatley. We've been mm-hmm. saying this at Turning Point as well. We are making this too big to rig.
That's what the hope is, that we get a definitive winner on Election Day. Caitlin Sinclair, thanks so much. I will see you again. You're going to be out with Jimmy Failla this weekend?
I believe next week.
Next week.
This weekend, we're in Wisconsin, University of Madison, with partnering with the Nelk Boys, actually. We're doing a Send the Vote little tailgate.
With the Nelk Boys.
And with again, the Nelk Boys, and Charlie Kirk will be in attendance.
Wow, that'll be great. And just so you know, everybody, if you're following the former president, today at 5 o'clock, he's going to be in Tempe, Arizona. I'm sure we're going to tap into that. And at 10 o'clock Eastern time, he's going to be at another Turning Point rally, and that's going to be United for Change in Las Vegas. Caitlin, great to meet you.
You as well. God bless. Thanks for having me.
Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I think Donald Trump and the Republican Party have done things that the Democrats have not done. Being aggressive against the outrageous, almost insane level of anti-Semitism on college campuses.
And that is one of the reasons a member of a former congressman named Peter Deutsch, we all know him from Florida, and he's not in power now, but he's a Jewish American, and he can't believe how anti-Israel so many people in the Democratic Party are, especially the loudest voices like the Squad. And guess who's been positive for it? Guess who's out there speaking for Israel? Speaker Johnson. President Trump. And to me, if you are a Jewish person, this is what people don't like. It is politically incorrect. But President Trump has said, if you're Jewish in America and you're not voting for me, I don't understand what you're thinking, because I'm sitting there, done more for Israel because I wanted to, and it's the right thing to do. And they're a great ally. And Prime Minister Netanyahu is a great friend in terms of recognizing the Golan Heights, in terms of moving the embassy to Jerusalem, in terms of backing them with the military equipment that they need and helping co-host the Abraham Accords. Those are the types of reasons why Donald Trump's expected to get not the majority, but much of the Jewish vote. Well, the other thing that Kamala Harris is having problems is talking, expressing herself, understanding programs, being able to answer simple questions. She last night in a town hall, it is so painful to listen to, but I just want you to hear some of the reviews about her town hall on CNN from CNN commentators. David Axelrod, cut 6.
The things that would concern me is when she doesn't want to answer a question, her habit is to kind of go to word salad city. And she did that on a couple of answers. One was on Israel. Anderson asked a direct question, would you be stronger on Israel than Trump? And there was a 7-minute answer, but none of it related to the question he was asking.
None of it related. That's just it. I mean, you can get what you want out. And I think that, you know, J.D. Vance is good at this, is if you get cut off by a commentator before you're able to finish, as soon as they ask you the next question, you go, like I was saying, and then you answer the new question. So Van Jones obviously said horrible things about Donald Trump a couple of days ago. Cut 7.
I think that the word salad stuff gets on my nerves. I think that some of the evasions are not necessary. But when she's talking about trying to get you a house, I believe her. Mm-hmm. She's talking, like, I'm trying to get you to help for your mama, yes. who's sick. I believe her.
Yeah.
When she's talking about, I'm going to do what I can to bring prices down, I may not agree with those tools, but I believe she's going to try to apply them. And so I believe that this is somebody who actually cares about people. And I think that she passed that test tonight. So on how she did it and some of that stuff got on my nerves. But I believe that she is going to fight.
Understood. Let's find out if there's more to know.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Here you go. It's time to find out if there's more to know. Some consumers who use Juul, the vaping product, said they have begun receiving payouts as part of a massive class action lawsuit settlement. The lawsuits allege that Juul misled customers about the risks and addictiveness of its products and specifically targeting young people. This dates back to December of 2022. The payout, $255 million and $45.5 million respectively, that according to federal judge in California. The amount remaining after taxes and costs in early October, that fee will be shared by 842,000 claimants. Don't vape. Next, Goldfish changed its name to Chilean Sea Bass. I'm talking about the snack, the crackers. Quote, we know you love Goldfish. Chilean Sea Bass is a playful nod to adults that the iconic fish-shaped snack is for grown-up taste, too. Next, shocking new study reveals how many medals female athletes have lost out to trans opponents. 900 medals have been lost to biological men. That, to me, is the reason why Riley Gaines is all over this and should be paid attention to. And, of course, this story. Caitlin Clark calls out the WNBA for their schedule amid offer from a rival league and possible player lockout. An interview that involved WNBA legend Sue Bird at an event. Carr complained the WNBA schedule taking place in the summer. The rookie phenom said the schedule interrupts her ability to play women's golf. The only downside about the WNBA, she said, is just, I had my golf take a back seat to basketball. I did not know she was a great golfer. That would be another great story for Caitlin Clark.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.